Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
You can save yourself so much angst and so many months or years of homeschool burnout and just misery if you get clear on what your personality type is, what the personality types of your kids are and your spouse. But you know, I think a lot of parents do school at home because I think it's hard to trust yourself when you're afraid.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents are afraid that they're going to screw this up. Mm-hmm. And by proxy, screw up their kids. You know, it reminds me of that John Holt quote that I put in the book, like, it's hard to trust yourself when as children we were taught we could not be trusted.
Absolutely.
So I definitely think doing some introspection on who you are as a parent, you know, how you tick, what, and then finding a homeschooling style that honors that. And then also as your kids get older and you can sort of tell more, are they extrinsically motivated? Are they intrinsically motivated? Are they extroverted, introverted? Not all kids are self-starters. I've always been a self-starter, but I have one daughter who needs a coach or a mentor or a goal set for her by somebody who holds her accountable. And neither is right or wrong. We're just different at our core wiring.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Thursday, October 1st, 2020, and I'm so pleased to be able to introduce you to somebody new. Her name is Erin Hufstutter, and she is the author of the brand new Crisis Homeschool Handbook, subtitled Practical Home Education Through 2020 and Beyond. You know, in the literary world, in the world of ideas, there is a term, smuggling, often used negatively. We've talked about some of them on the show recently. This Herbert Marcuse, watch out for him. Saul Alinsky, these people are smugglers. They're smuggling stuff into their books. But you can be a smuggler for good. So Erin absolutely nails something that I've talked about several times on the show in recent months, which is creating something tailored to the questions, concerns, and needs of new, finger quotes, homeschoolers, but then succeeding in a smuggling so many of the concepts, tools, ideas that we have promoted on School Sucks now for a decade. So it is a Kindle book, an ebook. So there's lots of hyperlinks throughout it. And in addition to being a great practical resource for actually finding things to, you know, create your own curriculum, the new homeschooler in desperate need of help is going to learn about the work of John Holt, of John Taylor Gatto. They're going to learn about TED Talks by Ken Robinson and articles by Carrie McDonald. They're going to encounter the work of Sandra Dodd, of Lenore Skenazy, Peter Gray. They're going to learn about the history, the dark history of the public schooling system in the United States. In addition to the book being extremely practical, there's just so much of what people actually need and they don't even know they're looking for. And there's also a lot of attention paid to, you know, foundational concepts for out of school learning, or AKA learning. What is self-directed education? Activities for personal growth and self-knowledge. I feel like Erin has produced a fine distillation of some of the most important, useful concepts that we have covered on this podcast over the last decade. So I was excited to have this conversation, and I'm excited to have her back in the future. A little about Erin. This is from the book. Author Erin Hufstutter lives with her husband and two kids in Southern California. She holds a BA in psychology from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and was the first ever student to enroll in the copywriting program at Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. In addition to a Crisis Homeschool Handbook, Hufstutter has written everything from McDonald's jingles to children's books. She is the founder and organizer of the OC Homeschool Meetup Group, and she is also the co-founder of iHeart Costa Mesa, a platform of positivity in her city, where she writes and podcasts under the pseudonym The Mesa Maiden. Now, you're listening to me tell you all of this, and you're saying, Brett, I already know all this stuff. I've been listening to your show since 2009. I've taken copious notes. But we're talking here about outreach. Now, it is not, and we are working on this around here, I will tell you, but it is not exactly a soft sell to all the media that people are drowning in right now, say, hey, person who is curious about homeschooling or just starting homeschooling or thrust into this situation by, public school closures, go check out the School Sucks podcast. There's just like 700 episodes. Even your copious notes that you've taken are no good here. What kind of a maniac tries to hand somebody their notes? Can you imagine trying to do outreach like that, even with somebody you know? You know, going up to them and going, can I show you my notebooks? Huh, they'd probably call the police. But the Crisis Homeschool Handbook is an efficient and unintimidating introduction to what we have produced here. You can find it on Amazon. It's linked in the show notes. It costs $5. And somebody you know needs it. Maybe more than one person. Maybe everybody you know needs it. So much exciting stuff happening right now with School Sucks as well. I'll just give you the highlights here. I'm getting a little anxious, not in a bad way, in an excited way, because I'm just putting shows in the can faster than I can turn them into productions and get them out to you. Wes Bertrand and I recorded the third part of our Integral Theory series last night. We talked about the concept of panarchy. I'm going to post an article in the School Sucks Facebook group for those who might be unfamiliar with the concept or just want to have access to the articles that we read, so you can have those when that show comes out next week. I think that just might aid in your understanding as like an audio-only participant. These integral theorists, they love their lingo. They love their colors. I recognize a lot of that stuff is hard to follow just in audio. So I will drop those links in the School Sucks group ASAP. Nathan Frazier and I also this week recorded the second installment of our supporter-only show. We have named that series Emotional Manipulator for Hire. Nathan is a professional copywriter, and if this is the first that you're hearing about this monthly bonus series that we're doing, he referred to himself as an emotional manipulator for hire in one of the early episodes of his Dark Arts of Marketing podcast. And I said, you know, that really covers our basis for what we're trying to do in this series, which is to help people defend themselves against the manipulative and propagandistic tactics that are used against them, but also understand the principles of those tactics so they can be repurposed for good. The first installment of this I released as a podcast because I loved it so much. It was on Blair Warren's 27 Words of Persuasion, or the 27 Words to Make the World Do Your Bidding, I think was the name of the episode. Our upcoming topic is tribalism. Have you heard about this? I'm working on getting that conversation edited, produced, made all nice, and then made available to the sweet, sweet, sweet supporting listeners. This project with Nathan hits on so many of the important themes of the School Sucks project, including critical thinking, media literacy, emotional and intellectual self-defense. But also, beyond critical thinking, it also has like some personal development benefits. I think you'll learn to be a better communicator and negotiator through a lot of the topics that we'll explore in that series. It is available to the people who help keep School Sucks going and growing. And you can become a member of that club by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV or patreon.com/schoolsucks. On that note, yesterday, I put out an University discussion group show with Scott Hambrick. It's called Balkanization and Culture Creation. Scott, of course, from Online Great Books, has what I think are some really interesting takes on what's happening right now in America, where it's going, and how to respond. Also coming up next week, Matt Beaudreau, the founder of Acton Academy in Placer, California. And this weekend, Danny McCarthy, Kevin Colt, and I will record In Pursuit of Utopia number 12. Again, that is also a supporter-only show on the British Empire. I'm sure we can zip right through all that in 2 hours. So a long story short, friends, School Sucks is a listener-supported endeavor. There are links for how to do that in the show notes. There are rewards to receive for doing that. And also, if you look at the website or you look at the show notes for this episode, you'll see our various partnerships, people who offer products or services that I feel align with the mission of School Sucks. They include Online Great Books, Richard Grove's Autonomy course, Jim and Beth Hood's Test Drive Your Future course, the University Virtual Summit series, and I'm very pleased to announce a new partnership with Crash, Isaac Morehouse's career launch platform. So if you are currently in the process of launching or relaunching a career, or you know somebody who is, please check out Crash. There's links for that in the show notes as well. All right, here is my conversation with Aaron Hufstadter. Thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you again soon. right, here we go. Erin, welcome to School Sucks.
Oh, thank you for having me. It is such an honor to be here. I mean, I've been a follower of yours for a while, and I can't even believe it. Somebody pinched me.
Thank you. So you are a home educating mom. You have two daughters.
Right.
14 and 12, right?
Yep.
Maggie and Ella, because they might be referenced throughout our conversation. And you are the author of a new guidebook called Crisis Homeschooling, Practical Home Education Through COVID and Beyond. And you just put this out like in the last couple months, August?
August 24th is when it went live. Yep.
So what was your, let's start with a really easy question. What was your motivation for writing this book?
Well, when COVID first hit and the schools in our area locked down, I thought, wow, now everybody is going to know what it's like to homeschool. You know, this was early days. Mm. But then as it kind of ground on and I realized how small life had become for everybody, homeschoolers and school families alike, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this really could go on for a while, just as you saw the news and the lockdowns and the news and the lockdowns. So in early July, I was thinking to myself this whole time, how can I help? How can I add value? You know, I'm kind of an entrepreneurial person by nature. So I thought, what can I do to help? And in early July, it suddenly struck me that this had been going on long enough that likely in the fall, the schools would not be reopening in any sort of way that school had looked before.
Right.
And it just kind of clicked in my brain that, oh my goodness, I think a lot of families are going to find themselves needing to homeschool, not even wanting to, but needing to.
Right.
And so I thought, I have 10 years of experience living this life. And is there something that I can put together to help these families feel less overwhelmed as they find themselves thrust into this tough decision?
Absolutely. So we're talking about a book that I think is like less for the people in my audience, but more for the people in my audience to give to people they know. Like here, it's all here. And I know this is an interview of you, but I just want to tell you, I'm having an amazing day. I told you before we started, I was prepping this morning for, I have three shows to record today, but I was prepping for two this morning. So I read your book, and I'm also getting ready to, early this afternoon, interview Matt Beaudreau, who's the founder of one of the Acton Academies. Acton is a network of self-directed learning centers around, I think there's over 100 in the country, and he has one in Placer County, California. I'm going through his stuff. I'm reading your book, and I'm just, I'm so excited about the book because as I'm going through it, I had looked at it like a week and a half ago, but I went through all of it this morning, and I was like, gosh, I could plan content for 2 years just out of what's in this book, right? Like all of the links you put in, all of the resources, it's really, really just amazing. So I think that it is that hard to find thing that a lot of people in my audience need who want to do outreach on this topic, right?
Right.
But it's like, you know, you say early on in the book, Google homeschooling and see what happens, right? It's like a very overwhelming undertaking, especially these days, especially after the COVID thing. And we also have some like definitional wobble on what homeschooling is because people, you know, this school directed distance learning is, you know, people are calling that homeschooling and it isn't. So
right.
All that being said, the book being more an outreach tool for people in my audience, and I hope lots of people will use it that way because it is a great resource. Did you focus in a little bit more on the type of person who might be looking for this kind of thing, right? Because everybody needs it right now. Everybody needs it. But I think a lot of people are still going to be stuck just at, I don't know, the stage of reluctance, even if they go into it reluctantly, which we'll talk about as well, because you went into it reluctantly. Lots of people are exploring alternative education right now reluctantly or apprehensively even. But there's some people who are just going to go along. So when
right.
you picture like an avatar of who you're writing to, is it in any way more specific than just everybody who's been thrust into this situation?
It's actually a book for your brother. Because I heard on a recent episode that your brother started, he's like, okay, I guess the way things are in the world, I'm going to dabble. I'm going to put together my micro school or my pod. It's definitely for people in your audience or people in my community to pass along to the people who traditionally were, you know, sending their kids to school in their networks. I had a lot of my homeschool friends coming to me and expressing frustration that because they homeschool, their friends and family were coming to them saying, okay, let's homeschool for 2020. So how do I do it? And that's such a big convoluted question to answer. So I thought, is there a way that I could distill down and curate everything that I've learned about homeschooling, you know, in my experience over the past 10 years and put it down into something concise and action oriented so that when people come to their homeschool friend and say, all right, how do I do this? You just send them a link and it's all there for you.
Yeah. And I wanted to go back actually to the beginning because before like 15 minutes ago, we had never talked. Right.
Right.
And I feel like there's some, you know, safe and kind of boring getting to know you type questions. I do want to hear about your background, but I said I was preparing for this other interview this afternoon with Matt, and he does this podcast called The Essential 11. The Essential 11 references a list of questions that Tim Ferriss came up with for his Tribe of Mentors book. The questions that he would most want to ask, like his dream guests. There's some really creative and insightful questions here, and I thought it would just be fun to ask a complete stranger one of them. So are you ready? Are you prepared for this? You have no idea what's coming.
I think so. No, I don't. But I'm ready.
What is an unusual habit or an absurd thing that you love?
Oh boy, an unusual habit. oh no.
See, they're tough. I was like, so the way Matt runs his podcast is he just, you know, he puts these questions to his guests who are, you know, entrepreneurs and achievers. And I was listening and I go, oh gosh, I wouldn't know how to answer a lot of these questions.
Okay, well, here's something. I don't know how absurd it is, like in the general public, but when my friends find out that I'm a gamer, that I like to play video games, that they're kind of surprised with that. Like, I'm obsessed with Zelda Breath of the Wild, and that's a way for me to unwind, is to fire up the Switch and play video games. So it's helped me relate to my kids a lot as well.
So if a guy like me was a Zelda enthusiast in, say, 1988, right? The original Legend of Zelda, then, I don't know, I know there was stuff after that, right? But I was like, no, this is really like the right speed, the right layout. I like the original Legend of Zelda. You feel like knowing that I love that, there might be worthwhile discoveries for me in the future of Zelda world, the Zelda world beyond the original NES game?
So there's been a lot of iterations of Zelda over the years, and I've ignored all of them. So I'm like you. I went from the original when I was a kid, and then the graphics and the storytelling of the Breath of the Wild version is so incredible and so immersive. It just hooked me all over again. And I went back to feeling both like a kid, but then also it was enjoyable and stimulating enough as an adult that it hooked me.
Interesting. So, and I could be playing this game, all I have to get is a Nintendo Switch.
Well, I don't want to encourage that because you might podcast less often if you're in the world of Zelda too much.
You know, it's actually a preview of what I think is going to be our final topic of discussion because, you know, you are a home educating parent in a time of new challenges. We're obviously all spending more time in front of screens. I said before we started that it was a point of disagreement in a conversation that I had a couple years ago with Peter Gray. And he kind of turned me a little bit. It was specifically on video games more than screen time. But the thing that I've said repeatedly through the years is there are a lot of people who are trying to get into the minds of children through these screens in various ways. And that is, you know, one of my cautionings about that. So I'd love to hear your perspective when we get around to it. And now we know each other a little better. We found some common ground on The Legend of Zelda. I want you to tell me about, we're getting to why you went into home education reluctantly, but talk a little bit about your dad's influence. You talk about that very early on in the book.
Right. So I have a really close relationship with my dad. We're both runners. Mm-hmm. And every Sunday morning, we wake up before dawn and we trail run together.
Yeah.
And he's very cerebral. And we talk, a lot about a lot of different topics when we have our weekly run. And so back around the time that my oldest Maggie was, four, and she was going to two morning a week lab school. It was just very loose. It wasn't really school technically. He had been delving into homeschooling, and I never know how he gets on these topics. He just dives into some rabbit hole or another, and he ends up in these strange places. And he found John Taylor Gatto's book, Weapons of Mass Instruction. And, knowing me and knowing my daughter and getting excited about the ideas in that book, he thought he would gift it to me. Mm-hmm. And it was just the wrong book at the wrong time for me. I was very I say in the book, I'm white knuckling it to kindergarten because I'm a very quiet, sort of pensive, introverted writer type. Mm-hmm. And I saw the title of that book and I just had an allergic reaction, and it was like a no, I can't even crack the first page, because knowing myself, I know that if I open that book and it makes sense to me, I would have no choice but to do the right thing, to homeschool my kids. And I just wasn't ready for that. So I tossed it in the trash, which as a writer, I mean, I've never not read a book cover to cover. If you put a book in my hands, I'm going to read it. So it
you
was a very-
tossed it in the trash.
I tossed, I'm sorry.
It depends on what your exposure has been, right? Because I was in grad school and I was in a very uncurated internet compared to the search results you get today. I'm in the beginning stages of researching some paper that I'm writing, and right in the first page of results, there is dumbing us down, right? I was intrigued, so I opened it and I read it, and I'm a college student. I'm not particularly curious. It's late at night. I'm fatigued. I'm interested in moving work that I need to do forward. And I said, oh, that's a crazy conspiracy. But yeah, that's certainly the first place you would go if you wanted to, scientifically manage a society. And then I closed it and I went about my business. And, then I left graduate school. I put a few more years of teaching experience under my belt. I started working in a different capacity, doing a lot of academic tutoring, seeing the public schools from a different, I think, more empowered angle than what I saw as a student. And I'm sitting in the library one day and I come across Against School on the internet, and I swallow it in one gulp, because I was ready. After having that additional experience, I was ready for what Gatto had to say. So there you are, the book's in the trash.
The book's in the trash can.
How do you finally come around?
So I think it did what you're talking about, which even though I didn't read a word of it except the cover, it was like a little chink in the armor, right?
Yeah.
And just put that little seed of doubt in my brain. And then in the book, I discuss how I went to a parent-teacher conference for Maggie at her preschool. And that was where one of the teachers made the comment that I should stop instructing my child at home, because if I continued, she would be real bored in kindergarten and she'd become a problem.
Yeah. Now you had asked, what can we do as parents basically to support to get our daughter ready for kindergarten? And they said,
because she's
first.
And yeah, I don't know. I'm just looking for their guidance because they're the experts. And so when I came home, that's funny that you mentioned dumbing us down, because I came home from that conference and I thought to myself, all right, I have to explore alternatives. Even if I never choose them, I at least owe that to her. And so I got on Amazon and I ordered Dumbing Us Down, because that felt like that was the book I was ready for, not Weapons of Mass Instruction. That was like graduate level Gatto. I wasn't ready for that yet.
Right. So yeah, you had just seen it, I guess, in real life, or an example of that title. That made sense. I'm just curious, you never found out how your father found his way to Gatto?
he doesn't remember. No, he doesn't remember, but he's, like I said in the book, he's vegan. He's been vegan for a long time. And so he just kind of goes places and on the internet, and he's listening to, I would say, kind of outlier types, people who are free thinkers. And I think that if you're a free thinker in one area, it tends to matriculate into other areas of your life over time. And so I just think that's what happened. Probably he was watching a YouTube video or reading something about, you know, a vegan person who also homeschooled their kids and recommended a book. It was probably something as simple as that.
Excellent. I wanted to just explore a couple of the topics in the book with you, and then at the end of the conversation, we'll send people to get this book. But one thing, the first thing that really struck me, aside from the background story and you describing your reluctance until you had these experiences, was how at this point, parents are challenged to also take on the role of educator. And I think this has been my long running problem with the term homeschooling that I am now forced to use for SEO purposes. We have to say homeschooling, but it's it's misleading. It's really misleading for what we're actually encouraging, what our different but related visions of education might be. Right. And parents are now seeing themselves in the role of educator, or at the very least, school support staff, which has been, I think, a problem, a kind of incursion into families for a long time, right? Where parents have to become, to a certain extent, the policemen of the school. But they're just kind of taking that role on without, and this is my experience from, you know, tutoring, doing a lot of academic tutoring, especially with kids who are struggling. They're not adding to that any questions that a person who, you know, actually really cares about a child would ask, right? So that whole child kind of approach, or you call it in the book the total child, right? And creating that picture, but also I think creating a picture of what the whole learning environment needs to be. And, you know, we've talked at various points in the history of my show about learning styles.
Right.
Beyond learning styles, a really important consideration that there's not enough talk about, even in the home education or self-directed learning space, is personality types.
Right.
And that includes the personality type of the child, but also if you're trying to set up a home education environment, what works best for you and your personality type as a parent is like a really super important consideration. Going back to the problem of the term homeschooling, people are just trying to do school at home. Therefore, they are trying to take on a role that not only are they not prepared for, in many ways, if they're just following the model that school has laid out, they might not be suited for, and they might be really unhappy in. So actually thinking about like what is the blend that suits the personality type of my child or my children and the personality type of me, the parent / educator.
You can save yourself so much angst and so many months or years of homeschool burnout and just misery if you get clear on what your personality type is, what the personality types of your kids are and your spouse. I mean, there was this book, I'm spacing on the author, but it's called Nurture by Nature. Mm-hmm. And it's basically all about how you figure out the personality types of all the family members and then how you can relate together and work together. But, you know, I think a lot of parents do school at home because I think it's hard to trust yourself when you're afraid.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents are afraid that they're going to screw this up. Mm-hmm. And by proxy, screw up their kids. And so it's very, you know, it reminds me of that John Holt quote that I put in the book, like, it's hard to trust yourself when as children we were taught we could not be trusted.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I definitely think doing some introspection on who you are as a parent, you know, how you tick, what, and then finding a homeschooling style that honors that. And then also as your kids get older and you can sort of tell more, are they extrinsically motivated? Are they intrinsically motivated? Are they extroverted, introverted? You know, not all kids are self-starters. I've always been a self-starter, but I have one daughter who needs a coach or a mentor or a goal set for her by somebody who holds her accountable. And neither is right or wrong. We're just different at our core wiring.
Mm-hmm. And some examples of the considerations that you give in the book are like level of social needs.
Right.
Introversion and extroversion, and then level of motivation is mm-hmm. intrinsic versus extrinsic. Agreeableness mm-hmm. versus disagreeableness. And then
that
learning
matters.
Style. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything is linked. I thought it would have been really cool if I could have had on my desk when the show started a physical copy of every link you provided in the book. So just hundreds of books and essays. And but I only have one. I only have StrengthsFinder by Tom Rath. So you mentioned in the discovery of personality type, Myers-Briggs is obviously a huge go-to. The Big Five, Howard Gardner, multiple intelligences, and StrengthsFinder. So I opened right to this page this morning. I just want to read a little section from the very beginning of the book. It's called The Path of Most Resistance, right? So this mm-hmm. applies to the students or the learners in the home that we're talking about, or in the world, I should say, not in the home, in the world outside of school. And also to those parents who are reluctantly taking on the role of what they think a teacher is supposed to be, which is what I did. You know, when I was a teacher, the most frustrating times in my career were, it's like, okay, what makes me good according to my boss? What am I supposed to be? Not mm-hmm. who are you? So this is a section of the book. I'm just going to read. It's a teeny tiny little book. So I'm going to read two pages, and I promise it's not even going to take a minute, everybody. But this is called The Path of Most Resistance. At its fundamentally flawed core, the aim of almost any learning program is to help us become who we are not. If you don't have natural talent with numbers, you're still forced to spend time in that area to attain a degree. If you're not very empathetic, you get sent to a course designed to infuse empathy into your personality. From cradle to the cubicle, we devote more time to our shortcomings than our strengths. This is quite apparent in the way we create icons out of people who struggle to overcome a lack of natural talent. Consider the true story of Rudy Ruttiger, a 23-year-old groundskeeper at Notre Dame Stadium, who was the protagonist of the 1993 movie Rudy. At just 5'6 and 165 pounds, this young man clearly didn't possess the physical ability to play big-time college football, but he had ample heart. Rudy worked tirelessly to gain admission to Notre Dame so he could play football there. Eventually, after being rejected three times, he was accepted at Notre Dame and soon thereafter earned a spot on the football team's practice squad. For 2 years, Rudy took a beating in daily practices, but was never allowed to join his team on the sidelines. Then, after trying as hard as he could for two seasons, Rudy was finally invited to suit up for the final game of his senior year. In the last moments of this game, with a Notre Dame victory safely in hand, Rudy's teammates lobbied their coach to put him in the game. In the final seconds, the coach sent Rudy in for a single play, and he tackled the opposing team's quarterback. It was a dramatic moment, and of course, Rudy became an instant hero. Fans cheered his name and carried him off the field. Rudy was later invited to the White House, where he met President Bill Clinton, Colin Powell, and football legend Joe Montana. While Rudy's perseverance is admirable, in the end, he played a few seconds of college football and made a single tackle after thousands of hours of practicing. The inspirational nature of this story actually masks a significant problem. Overcoming deficits is an essential part of the fabric of our culture. Our books, movies, and folklore are filled with stories of the underdog who beats one in a million odds. And this leads us to celebrate those who triumph over their lack of natural ability even more than we recognize those who capitalize on their innate talent. As a result, millions of people see these heroes as being the epitome of the American dream and set their sights on conquering major challenges. Unfortunately, this is taking the path of most resistance. I love that.
You gave me chills when you read that because I lived that when I was in my early 20s. I always got the messaging growing up. It was never if you go to college, it was when in my family. So go to school and get good grades so you can get into a good college. get into a good college so you can get a degree and you can get a good job. Mm-hmm. And when you get the good job after doing all the things, that's then you'll become happy. You'll be a happy adult. So I did all the things and I found myself sitting in a cubicle writing advertisements at a big ad agency in downtown Los Angeles. Right. And I was not sleeping well. I was, you know, drinking caffeine all day long just to keep up. I kept getting promoted and I kept getting pay raises. But one day I was sitting in my cubicle with all these other writers and we were working on the next big commercial we were writing. And I looked to the writer to my right and I said, I can't feel my lips. Oh my gosh, I can't feel my hands. I think, am I having a heart attack? And she looked over at me and she said, you're hyperventilating right now. You're having a panic attack. And I'd never had a panic attack before in my life. And I didn't know what was happening to me. And long story short, I said, whoa, something's really wrong, that I'm in my early 20s and I did all the things and I'm miserable and I'm anxious and I'm having panic attacks. I'm normally a very calm person. So I ended up taking a leave from work and quit that job shortly thereafter because I was denying my natural entrepreneurial tendencies. I shouldn't be managing people in a creative department at an ad agency. I needed to be on my own. And once I switched, I was so much happier and, yeah. and it was more authentic and it was so effortless to do the work once all the things I was bad at got out of the way.
Yeah, we're probably close to the same age. So we probably had a lot of the similar, well, I mean, not that age matters because I think unfortunately kids are still being trained in the same ideas today. It's okay to realize, student or, you know, college graduate, that you're on the wrong tracks, but you better find out what the next set of tracks you need to get on is. Right. So right. I wanted to have a career in broadcasting until I had, you know, a really inspiring college professor and had some, you know, cool and really self-confidence building types of experiences working with kids while I was still in college. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, maybe those aren't the tracks. Maybe these are the tracks. So I got on this other set of tracks, but then I kept looking back at the set of tracks that I had been on. We're like, well, no, that's more me to do something like that. Like, I understand that these tracks are going somewhere and satisfying some kind of need, but those are the, like, maybe, why do I have to be on tracks? You know, and I didn't have any answers or wisdom. And I think I didn't do what you said. Like, I wasn't always doing the right thing. I talked to a lot of people and they're like, yeah, man, school's easy. I got all A's. So many people have that story. And I was just like, well, no, I thought it was not easy. And I knew I wasn't getting anything out of it. And I didn't try, you know, and that creates problems, too. Right. So either you obey and you pay the price for that, or you resist and you pay the price for that.
Right. I like to joke that I'm a recovering pleaser because I did all the right things, and I have to be mindful every day because that wiring that I learned when I was a kid, that pleaser, saying yes to those expectations, it runs deep. And so I'm always having to be mindful. No, you don't have to do that. And you don't have to exceed that person's expectations. It's okay to just say no thank you to that opportunity, you know, if it's not right for you. So
right. And I think that also relates, like being a pleaser relates to that Rudy story a little bit. Well, obviously there is an intrinsic motivation visible in the Rudy story. But I think a lot of people take that idea of this is what success is, to overcome great odds and to do this thing and then become heroic in this fashion. And I think one of the traps, there's two traps of that. Either you do that and you wind up being a kind of inauthentic self, right? Like you're talking about having panic attacks. And I went through all that too, that doubt, this isn't the right place to be. But the other cost is when school shows you who heroes are. School shows you the people who made a difference, but it obscures all their humanity. Right. So it's almost like this is a heroic person. This is the Rudy of civil rights, or this is the Rudy of, you know, some political or international pursuit. But then it elevates them by cleansing them, by like removing all of their impurities to, you know, I think the implicit message to the student is, but you could never be this. This is not a person like Martin Luther King. Do you think he had any flaws? We're not going to tell you about any of them. So he's elevated to, like, that's unattainable. So I think a lot of people never even try. And the two paths that are created through what is laid out in Strengths Finder there is you either wind up being an inauthentic person, which is very stressful, at least in some ways, right? At least you're not expressing your true self through your work. And that can cause a lot of problems, right? Physical, mental.
Very common in our society, I think.
Or you give up at the starting line because school adds to take the path of most resistance. They add to that, well, you're not actually going to attain this.
Right,
know?
Right.
So understanding like who you are, both as a learner in the out-of-school environment, but also as a mentor, as a guide, as a teacher slash parent is so, so important. And like I already mentioned, the book is filled with great resources, but one article that you link to is called How to Find a Homeschooling Style That Fits Your Personality. Mm-hmm. And I could plan content for years out of what you link in this book. But I wanted to ask you about like what your style was. This lays out four: traditionalist, adventurer, supporter, and scientist parents. And I didn't know if you had gone that. And I guess you could be a blend of more than one, right?
Because I was just going to say, yeah. I'm a blend.
Well, that was why I wanted to ask you the question, because like I read the strengths and the attributes and the approaches for each, and you can see lots of those things. Throughout the book that you wrote. So yeah, sure. Just whatever you want to share about that.
So I would say based on my personality type, I'm not a natural earth mother. You know, I really had to learn parenting like a second language or a skill.
Yeah, sure.
It didn't feel very natural to me. So I think in some ways, and I kind of joke about this, is that I'm a little bit like a Jane Goodall of my children, where I'm always kind of like a scientist paying careful attention and like noticing, you know, how are they doing? And it's kind of observational and just kind of making sure that the trends are going in a way that serves them best. But for the past 7 years, I've been organizing a local homeschool group. We have about 30 member families. And something that I started back in the early days of the group. So the reason the group exists is because once I decided to homeschool, I thought, okay, what are the things, especially at elementary school ages, what are the things that are actually awesome about school that we can model in this group? So like the consistency, where we have the same families coming every week, they can see the same friends. We would have them make little, you know, shoebox mailboxes on Valentine's Day, and they'd give each other treats and do like the class party. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, something else that's awesome about school, I always loved the field trips, and I always wished they happened more often and that there were more different kinds of field trips. So early on, I said, you know what, Tuesdays are for adventures. And every single Tuesday, unless, you know, inclement weather or something else, every single Tuesday for the past 7 years, I've been taking a group of homeschool kids to a different activity, museum, lab. We'll go do tours of businesses. Every week, a different field trip. And we just adventure all over Southern California where I live.
So that obviously forces the question, how things changed for you in the last 6 months. And, you know, I talked to a few home educating families earlier on. One of my guests, my friend James Davis, you know, he was saying that, you know, we're kind of in the same boat. We're adventurers and we feel a little bit trapped right now, too. Mm-hmm. So lots of people are thrust into this crisis homeschooling. But for people who have already been doing it, there's been a need for adaptation as well, right?
Right. And I think that's the biggest disconnect, is that when people in the spring were doing the Zoom learning and it wasn't going very well and it was disorganized and stressful, that they said, wow, this homeschooling stuff really sucks.
Yeah.
And I thought, you guys have no idea. This is not at all what homeschooling is for us. We're out and about. We're in the community. My kids do community theater. We're always out somewhere doing something interesting and new and learning all the time. And so, yeah, life for us has gotten really small. One way that I've addressed that after the first few months of lockdowns, when things loosened just a little bit, my kids were listless and really suffering from lack of social stimulation and getting together with their friends after having lived such a robust life for their whole lives. And so I got together with three other families who had also been very cautious around COVID. And we said, okay, let's take a calculated risk. Let's still, you know, social distance and do the quarantine thing from the rest of the world, but can we expand the bubble just a little to include each other? So that way we can get the kids together and, you know, but life still is small and the kids get bored. You know, we can't go to museums up in Los Angeles. There's so many things that we love doing that are just not available to us. So we're making the best of it. I mean, we're going to the beach a lot. We're going on hikes. We're going to the park. The kids have taken up D&D, so now there's Dungeons and Dragons that they're doing once a week. Yeah, I mean, we're all hungry to do more. So much like the book, it's like, let's just try to make the best of what we have right now. But this is crisis homeschooling is not homeschooling. It's just the bridge to get back to normal life whenever that comes. And that part we can't control. We can't control when the world will get normal again. So we can just do the best with what we have while this is our situation.
And I would think that one of the goals of the book would be people are in, you know, crisis adaptation mode with this for sure. But with the right resources, they might realize like the silver lining here. And they might just say, this is the better way. And that seems to be like conversations that I've had with Carrie McDonald, the conversations that I've had with Corey DeAngelis. It seems like more and more people are making that decision, even without maybe a lot of the guidance or the resources that they need.
Right. Yeah. So I know that it's such an exciting time in the homeschooling space or the school choice space. You mentioned Corey and Carrie. So, but I know that this book is just one avenue, one point of entry for families who are homeschool curious, but there's so many resources out there. There's so many different avenues to explore.
Well, again, just a compliment about the book. I don't want to lose my train of thought here, asking you about what has changed in the last 6 months for your, you know, adventuring, exploring, outdoor, not just sitting around the kitchen table family. Of home educators. That's taking us to the great screen time debate question.
Uh-oh. You want to go there?
We're about to. Okay. But another plug for the book. I was looking at schoolsucksproject.com, you know, April, May, June, and just saying, this content needs to be better organized. This is almost right now, and you might have heard me talk about this a couple of times on the show in recent months. We don't have an adequate bridge to reach the people who need what we've created, right? Mm. We don't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. You know, they come to the website, they just see things that are going to scare them or turn them off. That has been, you know, the motivation to work on a project of pulling together people who are working on different aspects of this, creating a outward face of it that is less intimidating and more on the same page, that people with questions or fears or challenges around everything that's happening, they say, oh, that's what I'm looking for, right? Mm-hmm. So that's basically what you've created. People can read it in a day. And they can find links to just about everything from the philosophy to the psychology to actual practical resources. And I read the book. It's like it was inspirational, because when I was reading the book, I was like, I need to make my website function like this, right?
Yes.
I have a meeting on Friday with a guy who hopefully is going to help me do this. The other project that I've mentioned a couple of times is basically creating a network where we can all draft off each other. And, you know, point people like, are you more interested in the political developments or the school choice piece of this? Or do you want the philosophy, or do you want the actual tools and best practices isn't a phrase that applies here, but practices that work for people and maybe they'll work for you type content, and put that all in one place. But also, like, you know, how relevant is school? Because how relevant is college and getting a career? So that brings in, you know, people like the Praxis guys or what Isaac is doing with Crash. Those are projects that I've been working on. But this was, reading this book was like a good kick in that the site is organized enough for the world before this right? Mm-hmm. Where I was trying to, I think, produce something that was useful, but was also unique. And now I want to prioritize usefulness, because this is like a moment where a lot of people need what we have, and I have to make sure they can find it.
And who better to provide that than you, because you have all of the content and all of the connections. And like, if you could create a meta, you know, kind of a meta space for people come, and then they can just, you know, matriculate to wherever they want to go in terms of, like you said, policy or philosophy or, you know, boots on the ground. I need to know how to do this today.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the perfect person to do that. So I'm cheering for you.
Yeah. And I'm not beating myself up, but it is a little bit of a crisis of conscience where every day that's not done, it's like we're missing opportunities, right, to connect with people. So thank you for adding to my motivation with Crisis Homeschooling. Perfectly titled book, perfectly, you know, speaking the same language with people who have these challenges and questions right now. But to the great screen time debate.
Oh, man, I feel like I've been all over the place, you know, with this.
Yeah, and how has it changed? Yeah,
right.
Over the last half year or so.
So I would say I'm less concerned about content on screens, and I'm more concerned developmentally with the eyesight brain development element of children just kind of staring at a flat surface for hours at a time.
Yeah.
That's the part that I feel like we don't really yet know how that's going to affect their developing brains. And we're still kind of learning more about that. So I'm cautious. I mean, I feel like I'm cautious about that. But obviously in a COVID world, they can't go to classes in real life. So we're doing a lot of classes on OutSchool right now, which I cannot be more enthusiastic about OutSchool if people want to check that out. Mm-hmm. And the approach I've taken is this. If they're doing an out-school class or they're doing some sort of assignment, I kind of look at that screen time as a little bit differently than space out screen time. I think we all need space out screen time. I mean, we just talked earlier about my Zelda obsession, and I think it's a nice way to relax and unwind and kind of let your brain go. But I look at them differently. And I don't know, you know, I'm not an expert, I'm just a mom, but I do look at them differently. So the way we address it is I do sort of a loose schedule at the beginning of every day for my kids, and they have sort of a budget of screen time hours that they can use in whatever they wish. But I don't look at that the same as if they have two out-school classes that day. That doesn't count against their budget. So
okay, so because you have that flexibility, and you mentioned Peter Gray, you know, his comments like, of course this is what kids would do. It's the only place in their life where they feel like they have any control, right?
Right.
So of course this is the world that they would retreat. For a lot of young people, I think it is a kind of retreat into some place where you actually have ownership and autonomy in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But because your children are fairly young, have you put any thought into monitoring without being intrusive, right? Because one of the things that you point out in the book is that the sort of endless, mindless scrolling that, you know, this is not really the same problem it is for like 12 and 14 year olds. I mean, this is, everybody's doing this, right? Like lots of adults have this problem, but it's often indicative of something deeper, right? It's masking depression, anxiety, some other, you know, hole in the soul, so to speak.
Right.
We don't want to be police, I guess, in that fashion, but we probably want to be involved. And I just wanted to hear you talk a little bit about what that balance is like.
Yeah, you know, over the years, we've had to remove things like YouTube off of their iPads because they get sucked into the never-ending dopamine drip of, you know, every time a video ends, they queue up a whole list of, since you watched that, how about this, you know? And kids, I don't think, have the ability to see it for what it is. They're really lost in the medium, and they can't really take a step back. I think this is where my background in advertising has really helped me look at this from a different perspective, because I know how much time and energy and money goes into these focus groups and these people sitting around, you know, a boardroom thinking of how can we get them to watch more videos? How can we, and so you're going up against people who are experts in how to encourage them to just keep watching, keep viewing. How many impressions can we get on these videos and these ads? And how can a 10-year-old compete with that? You know, you right, just yeah. can't. Yeah. So right. that's kind of how I look at it.
The one thing that I always found I had the most success with as an educator was setting clear expectations, right? Mm. Telling people what was going to happen and then having a couple like contingency plans. Like if this happens, then, you know, if A, then B. And if B, then C. And kind of laying out like if we were going to go somewhere or do something, like here is just like a very reliable structure and set of expectations. So because this is something that you constantly have to be adapting to, like, you know, virtual learning schedules change and maybe a new thing is added or maybe some new interest comes up. And we see how people can just, adults and young people alike, can just sink into some interest, you know, and that whether it's that endless dopamine hit. By the way, if your children are making it to the end of YouTube videos, that's amazing, right? That means like if the video is 3 minutes long and they make it to the end, their attention span is like 15 times longer than the average Americans. So that's
well,
that's
Dan TDM's very compelling, so he sucks them in.
But yeah, I mean, is there? Do you find that there's like a proactive discussion about that, so you're not feeling like you actually have to intervene? In like the expectations are clear, because I think that's a really important thing too.
Yes, I think it's important that the expectations are clear. We talk a lot about that, and I'm having to enforce boundaries a lot. And when I say enforce, I mean that sounds very like, you know, violent or whatever, but it's just being consistent. It's like, mm-hmm. nope, you know, yep. let's find something else to do. And I'll kind of redirect them like, oh, how about we do this? Or this is where strewing comes in, which is you can, as their budget of screen time hours is coming to an end, you can have the table set with some interesting things or put some new books they haven't yet read on the couch or just kind of make the environment, you know, more enriching than just, oh, great, now I'm back to boring life after all the excitement online. And we also don't really allow devices when we're out of the house. So if we're at the park with friends or we're, you know, going on a hike or something like that, the devices stay home.
Right.
So
yeah.
that's important to be really present and mindful of, you know, we're out now and we're in the world and we're going to embrace it fully. And then that's waiting for you when you get back home later.
Excellent. So what else are you planning to do to spread the word about this guidebook?
I don't know. I just, it's funny because this has been my life for 10 years, but mm-hmm. I'm not really in the space where I've built a platform around homeschooling. I'm too busy homeschooling
yeah.
to have this like big Twitter following about homeschooling. So I'm just so grateful to people like you for having me on the podcast. And if anyone's listening to this and they think the story is compelling or they think it might be of value to their audience, I would be so grateful if they would reach out because, yeah, I need all the help I can get. I feel like this book can do a lot of good for the people in your life who are homeschool curious, but I definitely need help getting the word out. That's for sure.
Have you done any other interviews?
Not yet. I'm reaching out to people. I'm hoping now that I've done yours that people will say, oh, okay, she can hang on a podcast, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Who else do yeah. you have your eye on to be interviewed by?
I mean, I reached out to Lenore Scanese of Free Range Kids, but she's not really doing podcast episodes right now, but she mm-hmm. tweeted my book, which
oh, that's awesome.
Thrilled me to no end. It was so exciting. Mm-hmm. She's inspirational. And I actually let Maggie, when she was 10 years old, I let her fly by herself from California to Boston to visit friends because of her influence. So that was a big deal for us. And it was... Yeah. It was just wonderful to have her tweet my book. So I don't know. I mean, I would love to be on Corey DeAngelis's. He has a podcast, right? I'd love to yep. be on his show or anybody who thinks that this might be helpful. I'm open. I'm open to all comers who want to talk about the book for sure.
Well, here's what I think we should do. I'll put this show out and people will listen to it and they'll many of them, I think, will obtain a copy of the book, which how do they do that, by the way? What's the easiest
it's
way to
do
that?
It's on Amazon Kindle. And mm-hmm. If you go to crisishomeschool.com, it just forwards you right to the book on Amazon.
Okay.
So Crisis Homeschool.
And with Kindle, you get all the links in your EPUB version of it. Okay, that's awesome. We should let that happen. Then I will post about it in the School Sucks Facebook group. Are you on Facebook?
I'm so busy homeschooling that I'm not on social media a lot. But after this episode, I will. That's the first thing I'll do. I'll go join.
Okay, so we'll do a post about that. And maybe we could try to get like a discussion group, like as a follow-up, maybe in like 4 to 6 weeks.
I would love that.
And
yes.
You could do like a, Q&A.
A book club.
Because we barely scratched the surface of... Now, obviously, like we've been covering a lot of what's in the book in various forms over the last decade. But I really appreciate your insights. There were a lot more like topics that I wanted to dig into with you. So we'll have, and we could do a follow-up interview. But other people could get their hands on the book and maybe they would want to ask questions as well. So I think that's what we should do. I think people should have this. And I think people should be sending this. Amazon certainly allows you to gift a book. Somebody, this is all the gifts I give to people are books.
Yes.
So people should be passing this along to the people who need it right now. So we will follow up for sure.
Okay.
But the website again is?
CrisisHomeschool.com. And people can connect with me at Erin Huffstetter on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say too, I'm speaking about learning styles. I know that some people are more auditory learners and they prefer audiobooks. So we are actually, within the next 2 weeks, we're going to be releasing the Audible version.
Could they still get all the links somehow? With the
yes. So okay. I'm setting up the website so that when you get to that chapter, you can go to different pages on the website and the list of those helpful links will be available to you.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, the links were just amazing. I was like, gosh, it's all here. It's all here. So thank you so much, Erin. This was great.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor. And I'm actually tearing up a little bit because I just to hear you recommending my book, I mean, it's a dream come true. So thank you so much for your support. And I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for writing it.
Oh, thanks. I hope it helps a lot of people.